hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Biddle, here with the enraged voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Seething, Matthew. Absolutely seething.
Wow, fuming. Mm. What's wrong? What's going on?
Maybe that's a slight exaggeration, but yes, big talking point this week, which I thought we could start the show with. And this actually isn't about a commentary corner, although we do have a couple of cracking ones this week that you've already given me a sneak preview of. One in particular involving Mr. Mendy, which I'm really looking forward to getting into. But no, I just wanted to bring up a point, which is the goalkeeping landscape has changed over the last few years, and I don't think it's for the positive. And what I'm referring to is the fact that, and I think I mentioned this before, but in League One and League Two, the emergency loan has meant that we've seen less goalkeepers, less contracted goalkeepers in League One and League Two, because a lot rely on the emergency loan, and you'll see a lot of younger goalkeepers sat on the bench but never getting their chance because of the emergency loan. However, further up, we haven't necessarily seen more goalkeepers at clubs, which I would expect, certainly in the Premier League. And we've got a really good example this week of Southampton having to sign out of contract Willy Caballero to come in and, of course, play the game this weekend. But for me, I just find it odd in that what we've seen over the last few years are fewer and fewer goalkeepers contracted at clubs. And if anything, you would think that it would mean there would be more at the top. There would be more goalkeepers in the Premier League, each having a third and maybe even a fourth choice. And similarly in the Championship, third and fourth choice. But what I think we've found is that that hasn't been the case. We've actually got a lot of Premier League clubs that have two recognised goalkeepers, a lot of Championship clubs that have two recognised goalkeepers, and in League One and League Two, a lot that only have one. So, of course, it's forcing more goalkeepers out the game, therefore seething, therefore enraged.
Well, let's take the Premier League and the Championship for starters then, because League One, League Two, we've spoken about that a lot, I think, in terms of the fake number two and the emergency loan and how that gets utilised. Both are a positive and a negative for the development of young goalkeepers, really, because you get goalkeepers in the Championship who get an opportunity to bag first team experience in the lower leagues, also in the Premier League on those season long loans. But when you come to the Premier League and the Championship, how is it that we are in this situation that a Southampton, for example, can have your two first teamers in Alex McCarthy and Fraser Forster, and then Harry Lewis, who seemingly they don't deem ready for first team action, so they go and get a Willy Caballero? How are we in this position? I think we spoke back at the start of the season, or perhaps the start of last season, when more subs were introduced and we were seeing two goalkeepers, and we still do now see two goalkeepers on the bench. And at that time you said, are we set for a new number four? Because you almost need to be a third choice who's ready to be on the bench come match day. And now we need that extra number four to be that go-between from the players to the coaches to the manager. But at some clubs, there's still only two.
Yeah, look, there's a few points of note here. I think first and foremost, if you're Harry Lewis, you're fuming. You are really upset, because what's the point of him being there as a number three if when your opportunity comes, they're not going to play you? You know, effectively, you are very similar to the number twos that might be in League One, League Two, which are that little bit younger, but never necessarily used. It just baffles me. When we're talking in the Premier League, where the amount of money for being in the Premier League is as much as it is, how could you go into a season without having that recognised number three, or a number three that you trust to play? So first and foremost, I think from Harry Lewis's point of view, who, by the way, is an excellent young goalkeeper, he will be really, really upset by this situation. I think above and beyond that, I think for me, and I call it an insurance policy, I think every Premier League club should have a number three that they are more than happy to start if they have to start. Now, realistically, they're not going to have to play that many games. It's very rare that your one and two get injured in quick succession, but it does happen. And imagine that it happened for a team in September. You could legitimately have to play your number three September, October, November, December before you're able to do something in January, because, of course, in the Premier League, you can't do emergency loans. So for me, I just find it really, really odd. I do appreciate that it won't be necessarily top of a priority list for a recruitment department when you are looking at all sorts of different positions on the field. Of course, your backup goalkeeper, your backup to the backup, isn't necessarily going to be top of that list, but it is so, so important. Now, you could argue that Southampton have got reasonably lucky that someone of the likes of Willy Caballero is out there and available, but we must bear in mind that he's gone, what, 5-6 months now without proper training. He's 40 years old. You don't just get match sharpness in a matter of days and go into a Premier League game. And you know what, for as good as he is, I do think we saw signs of the fact that he has gone so long without playing.
So who then does this ultimately come down to? Is this a decision direct from the top, from the manager, from the board, from the director of football, whoever it may be?
Ordinarily, I'd say so, yes. I think it almost gets to the point where it becomes a little bit of a panic that they're suddenly in this position. And maybe beforehand, they'll have had the conversation. If the first two goalkeepers go down, do we play Harry Lewis? And they probably all sat around a table and said, yes, let's do it. Then all of a sudden, the reality hits that Southampton, who aren't that far off the drop zone at the moment, so they're then looking at it and thinking, we've got a few crucial games before Christmas. What do we do? So it might be that they have decided to play him, but given the situation, they've decided maybe to go down a different route. And actually, interestingly, Southampton, I know we spoke about him several times on this podcast, they've got one of the best goalkeeper coaches in the country in Andrew Sparks, not just in terms of a coach, but in terms of his goalkeeping intelligence, the fact that he will have seen this a long way off. So where does this come from? I think a lot of the time, or more often than not, this will then be your head of recruitment, your director of football, your manager, who will then look at it and decide, do we need to spend... And by the way, this is the other part to it that I must stress, is that to bring in a quality number three, and we think of the well-known number threes, the likes of a Scott Carson and Andy Lonergan, who's done it in several places, Lee Grant being a good example, Richard Wright not so long ago, Stuart Taylor did it at several clubs as well. Like, you think of these where you kind of felt with all of those characters that they'd sit as a three if they're needed, as they showed time and time again. When they were called upon, they were more than ready to step in. They had the experience to do it. However, each of them comes at a price. So I do get it. If you're sat around a table, I've got no doubt that, you know, Andrew Sparks, being as qualified and being as experienced as he is in this situation, would no doubt be recommending what the club should do. But of course, that's easy to say. But if it means they need to go and spend £10,000-£15,000 a week on what is effectively an insurance policy, you could imagine that a director of football, a manager, they may want to spend that budget elsewhere, given that it is unlikely, obviously in this case we've got an example here with Southampton, but it is unlikely that they would need to use that.
So after you mentioned this a couple of days ago, after you conveyed your rage to me, I did have a quick look at clubs in the Premier League and the Championship just to see who was not equipped to have a number three step in should the one and two get injured or suffer from COVID. And when I say not equipped, I mean clubs who don't have that recognised number three, who instead have untried and untested youngsters. It's quite interesting, the results. So from the 20 Premier League clubs, I actually found eight, one being Arsenal, another being Aston Villa. Potentially, you could say here they have Lovre Kalinic on loan. Depending on the circumstances of that loan, I guess they could bring him back in on an emergency. The same goes for Brighton with Christian Walton, who's currently on loan at Ipswich. And then you have Brentford. You have Leeds, who have the situation of three of their goalkeepers being 21 or under. That includes Ian Melier, the first choice. So they are almost the opposite end of the scale to the argument that you're posing. Southampton, we've spoken about. And then Spurs and Wolves. I guess with Spurs and Wolves, you could also say that Brandon Austin is the number three there. He had time on loan with Orlando City in MLS. He's probably ready to be that number three. And then Louis Maldon at Wolves as well, who they signed from Manchester City in the summer. He's a decent goalkeeper. And going into the Championship, I totted up 13 clubs who don't have that recognised number three.
Yeah, and I think this season in particular, COVID being what it is, and the amount of players that will miss 10 days, having to isolate, sometimes more, obviously, those that have had further complications. So I do. I just find it, and I feel like the goalkeeping market has shifted so much in the last few years, but on the whole, it has been negatively for these reasons, in that, fine, do you know what, if we haven't got as many goalkeepers in League One and League Two, you'd like to think that would suck more goalkeepers up into the Championship and Premier League, because there'd be more goalkeepers available for emergency loan. But the rules being what they are, again, the fact that you can only do the emergency loan from the Championship, then it doesn't actually help a lot of these Premier League teams, because they could carry four or five goalkeepers, but of course they can't send them out on emergency loans. So you get the likes of a Harry Lewis and so many other goalkeepers that are in the Premier League that are floating around for years without being given the opportunity to go and get the game time that they so desperately need. And you see so many of these goalkeepers that have made it to the top that were given the luxury of being able to go on loan after loan after loan. Dean Henderson, great example. Goalkeepers like that have been allowed to utilize their parent club in order to go on successive loans, to build their way up, to get to the level that they are good enough to play at. And yet you see so many, like a Harry Lewis, as you mentioned, where they'll go years without playing. When the opportunity finally comes, it's then taken away from them because at that point they decide to bring in someone on a free transfer. It just angers me a little bit. I just think that the rules need to change, if I'm honest. I think that it's not benefiting younger goalkeepers at the moment. And certainly this one, for me, I just feel, I go back to the point, it's not necessarily about experience or age. I just think that if you've got a goalkeeper as number three, you mentioned a couple there, two lads that I know very well, Brandon Austin, Louis Molden, fantastic young goalkeepers. I would like to think that if the opportunity came, they would throw both of those in. If they wouldn't, then ideally, my suggestion would always be bringing in an older goalkeeper that can sit as your number three and then allow your younger goalkeepers to go out, go on loan, get games and build a career.
Okay, on with the show.
Let's do it.
Okay, we shall start. Where should we start, Richard? What league do you think?
Well, I think we should start in the Premier League. I mean, What do you think of just mixing it up and we go back to front? We'll start in League Two and come all the way back.
Let's start with the Premier League, shall we? And two goalkeepers featured on Match of the Day. Can you believe it? David De Gea and Aaron Ramsdale. Is this the first time ever this has happened? Is it the first time this has ever happened?
Potentially. And it's nice. It's pleasing to see. Made me feel really warm inside when I watched. But rightly so. Both were very, very good. David De Gea. And it's nice that they're now starting to reference the fact that he's having such a good season, which we haven't heard that for a while with David De Gea. But I think now it is the narrative. And we talk a lot about the narrative, but the narrative around him is a very positive one at the moment. A couple of excellent saves, although one was described as within reach by Gary Neville, which did make me smile. Well, it didn't make me smile at all, actually. It was my usual...
Well, it was absolutely ridiculous.
That's ridiculous.
It was bonkers. To be fair to Gary Neville, he gave him man of the match. So true. Five saves from De Gea. He got man of the match. He effectively won Manchester United the game. But that save from Timu Pukki was the pick of the bunch. And Gary Neville said, just above De Gea, Within reach. Unbelievable.
In theory, I guess any save that's ever made is, of course, within reach.
Yeah.
So he's right. Of course it was within reach. But what does that mean? You're full stretch, it's going in the top corner, and you get the smallest of fingertips to brush it over the bar. But yeah, true. I mean, factually, he is correct. It was within reach. The save to his right, I really enjoyed as well. Big palm, just a clever save. You know, it's one that I think he always had control of it, given the power that he's got, good technique. But it was just the awareness as to the player coming in. Big parry out with his right hand into a safe area. And yeah, top performance from De Gea.
Harry Maguire also said that he's played some magnificent football in his career, talking about De Gea. Since I've been here, it's probably the best form, but that's probably for him to speak about. Is this his best form?
Do you know, I think it probably is. And really? I'd say that in terms of consistency. And I just think that, you know, you often find that when a goalkeeper comes, you've got that initial buzz that will surround a player, not just a goalkeeper, but any player that comes, the initial buzz, the excitement. Then, of course, you become quite normal. You get used to the big top-hand saves that he makes and the athleticism he shows, etc., etc. And then he obviously had a bit of a tough spell and, you know, the narrative can change. But I just feel that now the consistency that he's showing is very good. I know he got a little bit of stick for the going down in the Arsenal game, you know, but that wasn't necessarily a mistake. It wasn't a technical error. It was what it was. But I think in terms of his goalkeeping, certainly he looks like he's really tuned in again. And that's not to say he wasn't, obviously, last couple of seasons, but he's really got the bit between his teeth. Looks like he's got that real fight back within him, which I know there was. And it's always hard to say, because without being David De Gea himself, it's hard to know exactly how he's feeling. But certainly the body language that he's giving off now is that bit more powerful, I'd say.
Little stat on this one as well. Ralph Rangnick, the current Manchester United manager, is only the second Manchester United manager to register a clean sheet in his first two league games in charge.
Wow. Okay. Am I going to have to guess the others? Or?
Yeah, go on. Give it a stab. Who do you reckon it is?
Let me think. I'm going to go with one that's a little bit unlikely, but I'm just going to throw it in. David Moyes.
Sadly, you're incorrect. Yeah, it was, in fact, a chap called Ernest Mangnall.
Oh my word.
In 1903.
Oh my word. Okay.
How mad is it, though? It's taken that long.
Yeah.
More than 100 years.
Yeah, that is very unlikely, I guess. You would think that, I guess, when you think of some of the managers that have come in, Jose Mourinho, you'd think would have had a great chance, etc., etc. But there you go. Fascinating stat to start the show.
and moving on to Aaron Ramsdale, the second of those goalkeepers who was featured on Match of the Day, and he received a glowing report from Martin Keown and Alan Shearer. Really good save from Nathan Redmond in the second half. I think you'd call this classic Ramsdale. At least that's what it's appearing to be in recent times. He also started the move for the first goal and a lovely bit of distribution to Gabriel Martinelli. They featured on that analysis too. We've said it once, we've said it twice, we've said it 100 times so far this season on the podcast. He is having one heck of a campaign.
Yeah, really enjoyed that. Look, he's in the flow. He's absolutely in the flow at the moment. You can see he's really enjoying himself. My hope, sincere hope, and we keep saying it, is that he can stay at this level of intensity and this level of enjoyment as well, because I think he's a really good role model at the moment for younger goalkeepers that are watching him and learning from him, because he looks like he is really enjoying what he's doing. I know we keep saying it, and I want this to come across in a positive way. Look, at some point things are going to turn a bit. It always does. We've just given some good examples there. I sincerely hope he continues to play with this kind of energy and this kind of positivity, because I use that word again, role model. I think that for goalkeepers, you know, I've had so much negativity. We spoke about it on the podcast last week, and you know, you watch some of the games, you think, who would ever want to be a goalkeeper given some of the comments that goalkeepers receive? But I think at the moment he is an excellent example of someone who's playing the game with a big smile on his face and absolutely loving what he's doing. And it was another top performance. Great catch from the cross, as you mentioned. For all the saves that he made, that was probably my favorite bit, because he makes the catch from the cross, runs out to the edge of the box very quickly, as you're taught to do, to look to distribute, couldn't distribute by hand, and then saw the left winger break in, and in a split second was then able to change, turn it into a side volley, and with pinpoint accuracy put Martinelli, wasn't it, he put in, you know, excellent bit of distribution. And the saves that he made, look, he is so athletic, and I think this is something that maybe we haven't seen loads of in recent years. For all the goalkeepers that we speak of in this podcast, I would argue there are very few that are as athletic as Aaron Ramsdale. You know, that the saves he makes at times can look quite elaborate. And that's certainly not a bad thing. He's really worked on his power, his flexibility, his technique. And a couple of the saves he made here again, really, really athletic saves. One of those saves in particular was a good reaction save above his head, where he had to move his body in a couple of ways. Might have even taken a slight deflection to get a fingertip over the bar. Good save low down to his right. Prevented a corner as well by getting like a big firm hand, almost a wrist to it, and managed to stun the ball, pick it up. And then a very good one down low to his left. Again, just moved his feet well, fingertips round for a corner. So it's just a really nice game. Clean sheet, several very solid saves, and certainly his form continues.
Just a quick word on Willy Caballero. You've spoken about him plenty already at the top of the show, but the second and third goals, I thought the second in particular from Martin Odegaard just looked a little slow maybe to get to that one.
Yeah, look, it's tough. You know, like I mentioned in the build-up to the show, that he's, 40 years old now and hasn't been playing at this level for 5 months. I think even if you're training on a day-to-day basis at this intensity, it would still be hard to step in and play a game like this. But bear in mind, he hasn't played a game of this nature for a long time now. You know, I can speak from experience in that I had a shoulder injury once that put me out for about 7 months. And as I was making my comeback, I hadn't actually trained. But basically, we had an injury and we had a bit of a goalkeeping crisis. So they decided to throw me straight back in. So effectively, I went 7 months without catching a ball. And then 3 or 4 days later, I was asked to play a game. And it was away at Tranmere for Brentford. And I remember it vividly, because as excited as I was, as much adrenaline as I had, I soon realized as the game started, I felt a little bit out of my depth again, because it was all so new. It just seemed like the ball was moving that much quicker, because again, I just wasn't used to it. I'd gone so long. And as much as I was physically fit and I'd done all my work in the gym and kept myself in good shape, you cannot replicate playing in a game of that nature. And by the way, that was only a League One game at the time. So imagine Willy Caballero coming and having to play a game like this. So naturally, he's not going to be as sharp as he was several months ago. Cross-taking, the timing that's involved in that, the repetition that's involved in that, again, naturally, that's going to be very difficult. And we saw that on two occasions in the game where he just misjudged the flight ever so slightly. And as you mentioned, the goal that did beat into his right-hand side, certainly no error at all, but it was just the way in which he moved. You know, as you saw him move to his right and try and explode, it just wasn't quite there, which again, no fault of his, and certainly I'll give him no criticism, because what would you expect? Again, it's very, very tough to come into a game of that nature.
Okay, moving on to Chelsea 3, Leeds 2, and we're going to slip in one of these.
Commentary Corner.
So, yes, a commentary corner that you alluded to at the top of the show, Richard. Jonathan Pearce on Match of the Day. This was regarding the penalty converted by Rafinha for Leeds beyond Edouard Mendy. Do you want to hear it?
I mean, I don't, because, he, by the way, before we do hear it, he's moved into my top three now, by the way.
Jonathan Pearce, has he?
Yeah, moved in. After this comment, he is... You know, if we had like a top of the pops for the people that get goalkeeping the least, I think he has now safely moved into the top three.
So, he said, long run-up as Rafinha was approaching, left-footed player stuttered, oh, goodness me, Mendy should have got there. He did Mendy with his eyes, but when you see the way the penalty went in, it's not too far away from the Chelsea goalkeeper at all. They then showed a replay of it. Well, I think a goalkeeper of Mendy's class should have got there, wrong-footed by the stuttering run-up.
One word, clueless. Absolutely clueless. Talking from zero experience, someone who hasn't played in goal. Everyone here listening to the podcast, I know the majority of you guys, of course, do play in goal. So we've all experienced that one where you're ready for a penalty. Suddenly there is that stutter. And of course, you've already started to go. You've had to try and correct yourself. And there is just nothing you can do, because the moment that Mendy's gone for the stutter, which, by the way, that's the conversation itself. How's that allowed? How is that allowed in a penalty that they can stutter, which means the goalkeeper makes their movement and then they just roll it into an empty net because there's absolutely nothing you can do? But it's another example for me where, look, of course, he has to commentate on the game and has to say it as he sees it. But it is a situation whereby he will not have had any experience of facing that. So it's so difficult. By all means, comment on the striker. I'm sure he played outfield. I've got no doubt he'll have played the odd game outfield. And so he'll know what the player's done, who's run up and done his little stutter and finished it. And there's certain skill involved in that, given that you are allowed to do it for whatever reason. So by all means, comment on that. But do not comment on Mendy. It's, again, everyone listening in, you'll know exactly what this is like when you've had that moment that you've started to go, they've changed their mind, they've done something different, and of course you're flat-footed. You can't dive, you can't move. So he's got absolutely no chance once he's made that movement. But again, it's just not explained at all. And to actually potentially place some form of blame on him for what is a very, very good penalty, it goes back to what I said before, and where I love the fact that Aaron Ramsdale's playing with a smile. He's getting the positivity, because you have situations like this, which, again, a young goalkeeper watching this, seeing that Mendy's being blamed for conceding an excellent penalty. Certainly if I'm a 7-year-old budding goalkeeper and I'm seeing this, it's probably making me not want to play the position that much.
Mm. Just quickly, the equaliser from Chelsea, Mason Mount, Ian Melier, slightly off with the positioning. What happened there?
Yeah, and it's one that actually wasn't referenced. A great example again, by the way, because this wasn't referenced at all.
Yeah.
And if anything, I would argue that they might make a comment that Melier has misread the situation. He's expected the ball to maybe go a little bit deeper than it did, maybe towards a far post, in which case his position would have been fine. But with the ball being whipped in like that, of course, ideally, you would take a step or two to your right, because you have to take up a position to cover whatever the likely danger is. And of course, the moment it is cut in towards the near post, you need to get closer to your near post, because the likelihood is, the probability is, that it will be fired towards your near post, as it was in this situation. And in this circumstance, he's misread it and obviously thought it was going far, so it gave himself no chance. It's one of these, again, that you can't necessarily blame him, because I think that even if he does take up a good position, it may still beat him. But certainly he didn't give himself a great chance by being so far out of position.
Let's quickly whiz through the rest of the action from the Premier League. We'll start at the Brentford Community Stadium. Brentford 2, Watford 1. Some might call this the Richard Lee Derby. Mm. Who knows? I think it was the first ever top flight meeting between the clubs. Sadly, you never got to play in it, mate. Sadly, there was never a top flight meeting when you were involved with these two clubs. But Dan Backman did play a good performance, 3 good saves. Unlucky to be on the losing side.
Mm, indeed. I did have a little bit in the programme, though, which was quite nice.
Go on. I do appreciate. What was this then?
Oh, I had a page in the programme. I haven't sent you this, have I? No, I had a page in the programme. Yeah, I'll send it to you. I mean, it was nothing other than explaining it was from Greville Waterman. In fact, no, you do know this. I did send it to you. Greville, who is a big Brentford fan, is involved in several Brentford-related projects, etc. And he wrote a piece for the programme just explaining a bit of my journey there and the fact that I'd played for both clubs, which was very nice of him. So a big thank you to him.
It was enjoyable. Was it. Of course. Sorry, mate. I get so many messages from you. It was the bit where at the start he said, I was really excited when we signed Richard Lee from Watford and you just felt like there was a but. There was a but coming somewhere. I was just waiting for it.
Yeah, and it wasn't far away. Then he explained how my career or my stint at Brentford started, which wasn't overly positive, but that's a story for another day. But no, it was a really nice piece. I appreciate him writing that. And it was great watching this game and in the end, a huge result for Brentford. And certainly from Backlund's point of view, another very solid performance. He's made a lot of saves in the last few games, it's fair to say. And I thought he was good again. Certainly the save to his right hand side, the tip over was very good. The save to his right hand side, as he saw, I think it was Mbeumo who cut inside, opened up onto his left foot, just a slight move from Dan Backman to take up a better position given the situation. I think he read it very well. And then to show the power and athleticism to get himself to his right hand side. If anything, when I was watching it, I almost felt the commentators maybe didn't give him enough love in that moment because it was an excellent, excellent save.
Burnley 0, West Ham 0. Nick Pope continuing a decent run of form. Saves from Issa Diop and Saeed Benrahma. 16 shots. West Ham had 14 corners as well. He did well to keep a clean sheet.
He did, yeah. Really good save from the header, actually, this one. So it was the ball whipped in. He's had to go to his left. In fact, similar to the Melier one in that ball's whipped into the near post. So he's taken a step towards the near post. In this case, the header kind of comes back across him. But we've mentioned this before, whereby had he have parried it into what would have been a conventional area, realistically would have been back into danger. It would have been back towards the penalty spot. If he could have done really well, he might have got it across the goal. But even so, it's a long distance for the ball to go across the goal and out the other side. So there'd still be danger, given that you've likely got opposing players following in. But what I loved about this is that you could see, as the header comes in, he purposefully parries it back the way it came and actually manages to get it out for a corner back the way it came. It was a really unusual save, but I'm convinced that he meant to do it. And if he did, I think it's brilliant goalkeeping, very, very intelligent goalkeeping. And then he made two saves, full stretch to his right, both very similar, both good parries, again, using his entire frame, using the power that he has. And certainly it was another very positive performance from him.
A couple of 1-0s, Liverpool 1, Aston Villa 0, Man City 1, Wolves 0. We'll start at Anfield. Alisson on Danny Ings, pen or no pen?
I mean, no pen in that you saw the replay and he did get a hand to it. What I would say is this was very unlike Alisson in that a couple of moments in this game where we talk about ordinarily he is so calm, his decision making is so good. And actually on that particular one where he's come out, gone to clear it, the clearance has got blocked, which in the first instance, again, Alisson ordinarily would fire this wide of the striker and the oncoming defender as well, but obviously fired it into them. That was the first misjudgment. And it was, the word I've written down is panic, which I would never write that in association with Alisson, but it did look like he panicked. Now, the fact that he has got a hand to the ball, in the end, you would argue it's a great decision to dive round the player like he did and manage to get a hand to the ball, because effectively that then did mean that they didn't concede the goal. But yeah, many times this could have ended up as a penalty, you know, a fraction off, this would have ended up as a penalty, whether he got a red card or not, I'm not sure. But yeah, unlike Alisson, there was a moment as well, I think it was in the first half, where ball came through, and in fairness, he stumbled, which I think if he doesn't stumble, he probably gets there. You could argue that maybe his positioning could have been a yard or two further forward to try and meet the ball at the edge of the box. But again, just a couple of moments, nothing that I think we need to draw too much more attention to, because no doubt he'll go and play the next game and be man of the match again. But for someone who's ordinarily as calm as Alisson is, just a couple of moments were a little bit unlike him.
Similar to Backman too, Emi Martinez, unlucky to be on the losing side. 20 shots in total from Liverpool. It looked like as well, he thought he could have reached the pen. I don't know whether you thought this. His reaction when he got up suggested that he maybe thought he could have saved that. Could anyone save that pen? It was right in the corner, in off the post.
Do you know what I think it was? And I love Martinez when it comes to his penalty antics, because, look, ultimately it's you versus them. Very few situations in a football match are as black and white as that. You've got the striker, of course, got a dead ball from 12 yards and they're trying to beat you. So again, you'll use whatever was in your armory technically to try and make the save. But of course, if there's anything else you can do that are within the rules, then you do it. And we've seen examples of this before with Martinez getting in the heads of those that are taking penalties against him, which again, he was trying to do here. He was pointing in the right-hand corner, very obviously. I think the reason he was frustrated is that he knew exactly what Salah was going to do. He knew he was going to go down to his left. So if you feel like you know where the penalty is going to go, it is frustrating when you don't make the save. Now, to be honest, you have to give credit to Salah, because although Martinez has read him absolutely perfectly and he's done all the games, he's done everything, Salah's still put it right in the corner. And I think most players, it might be, and we've seen it before, most players, if Martinez has done all that beforehand and Martinez knows exactly what you're doing, he's ordinarily making the save. And someone of his size, power, everything else, he's getting so close to that corner, given how quick he is. So for Salah, the only way he was going to score this was to put it in the postage stamp in the bottom corner, and that's exactly what he did.
So from two South Americans in that game to another in the other, Edison, a late save from a Max Kilman header in that 1-0 win over Wolves. And another bit of classic commentary, the classic line of, you know he's a good goalkeeper when he's had nothing to do all game and pulls off a save right at the death. That he did. It was a very good save, and even more important, not just for the win, but for 100 clean sheets in all competitions for the Brazilian since he joined Manchester City. That is some record.
Yeah, this is going to also form part of my goalkeeping cliches book. expect it out next Christmas. But look, what I loved about this is it is actually a top, top save. And we say it a lot about Alisson. We say it a lot about Edison. They make saves look easy. I feel like I've had this conversation recently a few times about these two in particular, in that you look at lots of goalkeepers and the way in which they operate. And certainly, and I'm saying this as a goalkeeper who was at times maybe a little bit flamboyant in the way that I played, and, you know, almost having like the all action hero approach. But now I really find myself drawn to goalkeepers that are able to make it look as simple as the likes of Edison do. Because this, for me, feet were excellent, crossed to the far post, moved across so quickly, took up a great set position, very tall. This is going just in under the crossbar, and the speed of reactions to get the tip over, but to make it look as easy as he did, and not really take any massive credit for it. Again, just looks like he goes out there. He's fantastic at what he does. He does his job. Does he enjoy it? I mean, I think so. But he just looks so calm in everything he does. And I think it's that I'm really drawn to with Edison. This was a top, top save, but you wouldn't know it given his reaction.
I think he enjoys it, doesn't he? He must do.
I mean, you'd think so, but it's that. And I'm saying this as a positive. I don't want this to come across as a negative. But where he at times looked like he's just rolled out of bed, you know, and his hair's all over the place. He's so relaxed when he's playing out. You know, strikers closing him down, pretty much getting to within a yard, and he's just, you know, then slotting it into central midfield, just with no care in the world, seemingly. And I love it. I love it for the fact that he's so good at it. His style, again, I don't think it would suit many personalities. It certainly wouldn't suit me. As a goalkeeper, I couldn't play. Maybe it's that. I couldn't play like he plays, being as calm as he is and just seemingly floating through a game, doing his job so perfectly. Distribution fantastic, making saves look easy. And then it's another game done. It's another clean sheet. So many clean sheets as well. I just think that mentality for a goalkeeper is quite unique. But for me, it's such a powerful mentality to have. He's so calming for his teammates. And I'm sure if you're coming up against him, it must be a little bit frustrating to see a goalkeeper just so in control.
So that is now 100 clean sheets in all competitions from 212 games. In that time, I was reading these stats on the Man City website. He's conceded just 161 goals across the 18,942 minutes he's so far racked up. That equates to a goal conceded every 117.7 minutes. He's made 365 saves, and that equates to a save percentage of 69%. Bear in mind, that's over the course of four and a bit seasons.
Yeah, it's excellent. It's, you know, in terms of the number of shots he's faced, of course, it's going to be that little bit less given that City are as good as they are, but they are really solid stats. You know, I think that if you're in the high 60s, early 70s, that's considered good. And of course, the big thing for Edison, everybody talks about it, and I'll just add to it, is that it's not necessarily about that with him. It's everything else that he brings. So, yeah, huge well done to him to get to 100 clean sheets that quickly. I can't imagine there were too many others that have done it that quickly.
and finishing in the Premier League at the King Power, Leicester 4, Newcastle 0. And nice to see Kasper Schmeichel playing with a bit of fun, dealing with an overhit back pass from Timothy Castagna and doing well. Good football.
Yeah. Look, just a really bizarre moment. Terrible back pass, first and foremost. Goes against everything you're taught to do. You know, don't go towards the goal. Don't fire it past your goalkeeper. But ordinarily, I'm watching him run back and I'm thinking, you just give up the back pass here. You go with your hands. You just try and scoop it out or do something. Dive on your chest and just try and scoop it out. But the way in which he's got there, seemingly with, you would think, the wrong foot, but then I don't think he can get his left foot to it. So I think he actually has to go with his right foot. I can't for the life of me figure out how he's got so much power on the ball, because he's running towards his own goal and he's like flicked it with his right foot and he's got about 30 yards. Unbelievable technique to get it away. And somehow he's managed to keep possession as well. It's then gone to his left back and they've then broken up the other end. Just really unusual piece of goalkeeping, but I don't think you could have done it any better. Executed it absolutely perfectly. And as you say, he seemed to enjoy it afterwards. And certainly his teammate, whose name is again, sorry, Matthew?
Timothy Castagna.
He would have been very, very happy, I'm sure. I'm just showing there, by the way, my lack of knowledge when it comes to outfield players. I'm very aware. And should I apologise for it? I'm not sure. I'm so goalkeeping centric, Matthew. That's the point.
It is the Championship Rundown. I'll read out the pick of the bunch, Richard, and you can comment as you wish. 11 saves from Lee Nichols as Huddersfield almost bagged a win against Coventry. Si Moore with an important stop in that one too. That was from Dwayne Holmes. It ended one apiece, so crucial saves from them both. Birmingham threw away a two-goal lead at home to Cardiff. Matija Sarkic back in for Neil Etheridge. And I reckon you'd call this a zingerling. A brilliant piece of goalkeeping distribution to help set up Troy Deeney. James Shea apparently didn't know much about an excellent reaction stop to earn Luton a draw against Fulham. He is now keeping Simon Sluger out. Joe Lumley back in for Middlesbrough. He bagged a clean sheet against Stoke. Chris Wilder still trying to figure out who his number one is. Joe Lumley, Luke Daniels. Slippery conditions at the Liberty Stadium not helping Ben Hamer as Nottingham Forest saw off Swansea. And Luke Southwood and Di Cornell with excellent stops in their respective clashes with West Brom and Millwall. Southwood's not enough to overturn defeat for Reading. Cornell's, however, clinching victory for Peterborough. Really good save, this one.
Indeed. Right, where do I start? So, Ben Hamer, tough afternoon for Ben. It's fair to say he's been brilliant for Swansea to this point. I've watched this several times. I can't help but feel it does just pop up on him a little bit. And of course, he then spills it and that results in a goal. So it's a tough one. That it doesn't look good, of course, but we've all had that where it just pops up at the last second. And if you've already committed to the technique, then quite often you'll find that you spill it. In terms of James Shea, yeah, I heard that comment too. And the fact that he's dived down to his left and got a good hand to it, my guess is he did know quite a bit about it. Did you mention Andy Carroll? Actually, Matthew, I did mean to ask you that.
I haven't. No.
Well, let me mention it, because that was great goalkeeping. Firstly, to head away a corner that came in. He's then fallen into the net, but the speed at which he got up and managed to throw himself forward to save what would have been a certain goal. So big credit to Andy Carroll, certainly helping out the goalkeepers union there. And actually, you mentioned Luke Southwood. He then followed that up with a great save. That was a good save to his left. Full stretch, really beautiful save. That's what I've written down in my notes. Just one of them where the lad's cut inside, curling it in the far corner. Luke Southwood's read it perfectly and got himself full stretch. One of those that you're just hoping someone takes a picture at the moment of impact, because it did look very, very good. Matija Sarkic, great distribution, as you mentioned. Lovely side volley into the path of his player, and two passes later, it ended up as a goal. And Lee Nichols, you did. I felt sorry for him. Really, really good top-hand save. And one of those frustrating goals as well, in that it's whipped in and some might say that maybe he would have been better off staying on his line and seeing if he can save the header. But I think so often you're then keen to try an impact play, especially when it's whipped in so close to you. And when a lad comes in just in front of you and gets that glancing header, sometimes there's not much you can do. And as you mentioned, Cornell, certainly got to mention, this was quite an odd one in where the ball ended up. So the ball shot from probably 8 to 10 yards and he's got up brilliantly to get a top hand to it. But somehow he's managed to fire the ball back about 15, 20 yards back in play. Brilliant, brilliant save. For the life of me, I still can't quite work out how he's done that with his hand to get the ball back in play. But yeah, excellent save. And the fact that they won, certainly a crucial save.
Very, very good. Before we move on to the best of the rest, just from those comments there and those saves there, I do feel like in the Championship this season, we are seeing goalkeepers perform, perhaps who we maybe wouldn't have expected to have been performing this season. James Shea, an example there. Di Cornell, another example. You could maybe even throw Lee Nichols into that.
Yeah, potentially Ben Hamer as well, given how things started for Swansea this season. No, you're right. I think we've seen so much chopping and changing in the Championship. And again, I'm saying this without having gone through all 24 teams and considering goalkeepers that have started the season that are still playing. But you think of the amount, you know, Fulham being the same, Gazzaniga, it's now, of course, Marek Rodak. There's not as many goalkeepers starting the season that are still playing now that I feel ordinarily would be the case. And again, I'm saying this without having stats to back me up, but it does feel like now more than ever, managers are that bit quicker to change a goalkeeper.
Okay, well, shall we do the best of the rest quickly?
Absolutely.
Toby Savin and Bailey Peacock-Farrell at the double for Accrington and Sheffield Wednesday. Savin denied Owen Doyle and Declan John of Bolton in quick succession. A brilliant double save, that one. And Peacock-Farrell besting Chris Porter of Crewe from the spot. What a save. And from the subsequent rebound too. Brilliant bits of goalkeeping from both.
Yeah, massive credit to both of these. It's nice to see that Darren Moore's come out and said loads of really positive comments. And there is part of me that wonders whether this is a ploy to ensure that Bailey Peacock-Farrell stays at the club, because, of course, there is a chance that he could get recalled to Burnley. And certainly, I'm sure that both Darren Moore and pretty much every Sheffield Wednesday fan will be keeping their fingers crossed that he stays till the end of the season at least, because on the whole he's been excellent this season. Toby Savin, you mentioned the double save, really, really good. Sharp to his right, it was actually the second save, which visually is great as he moves across, makes himself big, and the power that he gets with his left arm to effectively shovel the ball away as a reaction save, I thought was very, very good.
Hokey cokey keepers at Accrington this season, by the way.
Yeah. Look, I think it's one where you've got a manager that does have history of doing that. And look, it's one of them where we talk, obviously, as a goalkeepers union, that we believe, and certainly I believe, that when you give a goalkeeper a chance, you should give them a proper chance. Because I think if you're playing with the mentality of one mistake and you're going to get dropped, you play a very different game to one if you know that you've very much got the shirt and you've got the backing of the manager. I guess my wonder would be whether they are really getting enough backing, whether they've effectively built up enough credit. Because I just think that what ends up happening, if you keep going back and forth, it's very tough as a goalie to build up a run of form. You know, I think it is different to other positions in that regard. So certainly in terms of where my beliefs are, I would always like to give a goalkeeper a proper chance and allow them to get a good run of games to really build up. But there are a lot of managers out there that have a very different approach.
Charlton's Craig McGivray, a big spread at a big stage of the game to stop Sam Smith and Cambridge. Louis Jones, important saves for Doncaster against Shrewsbury. That was a first win in eight for them. But it's eight games without a win for Gillingham. Aaron Chapman replacing Jamie Cumming for the past two games there.
Yeah, so to recap on a couple of things you mentioned there, certainly McGivray, great save this one. Very quick out, reads the situation very quickly and produces a very good shape at point of impact to make the one-on-one save. Lewis Jones, excellent performance. The save from the header, very, very sharp save, and then a brilliant spread. Ball came through, showed bravery as he came out at the feet. Made a very, very important save and a big clean sheet for them. Of course, haven't kept too many clean sheets this season, so no doubt he'll enjoy that one.
And David Stockdale, guess what we have for you? I feel like these are becoming a regular thing with every pod we do now.
Yeah, they are. And actually, I guess if there was a goalkeeper that was likely to get an assist this season in League One, you'd have to have Stockdale top of the list. I think with the distribution that he has, the length he has, the way in which Wickham play, Akinfenwa were up front, it's like the perfect combination from goalkeeper to the best striker, arguably in the country, at holding the ball up and then shooting from the distance that he did. I could see this being quite a regular thing. This could very much be a ploy.
Yeah, and great for him to get on. Could have had two. I mean, what do we? How do we count it? Because it was a draw against AFC Wimbledon and Wickham got a very, very late equaliser from the spot. But the penalty also came about from an absolute punt up the pitch from Stockdale, which bounced and then I think bounced again. And then they got the penalty. So what do we say about that? Is that an assist for the pen? What are we saying?
I mean, personally, I want to give some credit. The annoying thing is, from a goalkeeper's point of view, you get zero credit for that. Like, the for all the stats that are out there now, which become more and more elaborate. You know, it used to just be the assist, and now it's the assist to the assist, for instance, you know, and there's all these crazy stats out there. I don't think there's one yet for a goalkeeper that punts it that far forward, a penalty is given as a result of that. I don't think he gets any credit according to Opta, StatsBomb, whoever it is. So hopefully at some point when we get a little bit more elaborate with these stats, that might even be involved.
It's got to be a key pass or a smart pass, whatever they're called. Surely, surely.
You would think.
Okay, finishing in League Two, Mark Howard of Carlisle still doing a job. Elliot List and Jake Taylor of Stevenage kept out the Cumbrians 1-2-0. And Joseph Anang back in for Stevenage. Adam Smith back on the bench.
Yeah, big save there, certainly from the deflection. Not an easy save at all. And showing great reflexes, great athleticism for, I want to say someone his age. He's obviously not that old. But certainly as you do get older for a goalkeeper, that's the bit that can sometimes be that little bit tougher. But certainly he is still looking a spring chicken, it's fair to say, Matthew.
And Glenn Morris, another GK. OG, we speak about assists. There's also been a lot of own goals this season. Gutted for him here, but doesn't matter. Crawley took the points from Leighton Orient, so it's wiped off. Doesn't matter. No one cares. It's finished.
That's it. If you're going to have a moment like this, it has to happen in a win, and then we can just brush it under the carpet and pretend like it never happened. I did feel for him on this one. So for those who haven't seen it, floated to the back post. I think he's just lost his bearings a bit, couldn't quite get his footwork as it needed to be, and it's dipped right in the top corner. And it's that one as you're backpedaling towards the post. There's always that worry that you're just going to smash the post. So I wonder whether that was just in the back of his mind. So he's ended up jumping up. The ball's hit the post, come back, hit him, got in the goal. So a frustrating moment, but a very difficult one, certainly. Clean Sheet Club. Yes, it's back. It's been a little while, it's fair to say, but it's time for this. And as always, we start in the Premier League with Mr. Edison. He is now the Centurion. Aaron Ramsdale, lucky number 7. Alisson, keeping it clean on doctor's orders. David De Gea on a Leo Sayer. Nick Pope, ever-present performer. Lucas Fabianski, Blanksky. Kasper Schmeichel, back in the club for the first time since the opening day. Into the Championship. Ainsley Pearce, 13 months since his last league start. Not unlucky with 2-2 for the Durham dude. Or technically 3. Personally, I always count it if you come off the bench. Any opportunity to keep a clean sheet. Ryan Alsop, let's get rocked. Adam Davis scrubbing up nicely on his recent return. Joe Lumley, copy that. Sam Johnson, 3-4. In League One, Toby Savin having a ball. Craig McGillivray, 2 on the spin. Bailey Peacock Farrell, and copy that too. Lewis Jones doing a job for Donny. Gavin Bazunu, I knew, you knew, we all knew Bazunu. Paul Farman standing strong for the first win in 10. Ross Doohan, everybody do the Doohan. Ben Killip, first in the EFL since mid-September. Rory Watson, what's on his TV tonight? Blankety blank. Carl Rushworth, loving pro-life. Mark Howard, that's how for now.
Wow. I don't know whether I've missed that or not.
No, I don't know if I read that correctly or not. All these references and all these songs that you subtly slip in there, a lot of them are way over my head.
I don't know, mate. You mentioned Top of the Pops earlier, so I thought you'd be a big fan.
True. True. No, you make a good point, but several there. I mean, I have no idea whether I read that, how you intended me to.
No, absolutely fine. Do you know what? There's a few in there, but there's one, that Ryan Alsop one, great track, that Def Leppard. Should we have a bit of that? Let's have a very quick bit of that, shall we? There we go. That tees us up nicely for the table, Richard. Fair to say, the most exciting part of the podcast for me.
Absolutely. And I'm excited and curious to know whether it's changed much since we last did this.
So it's nearly a month ago now that we did this. And because I'm me, I had a look at the table last time out, and it was on top Liam Roberts with 9-15, Mark Travers was 8-14, and Ben Amos with 8-15. Those were the top three. So nearly a month ago. Since then, there's been about 6 or 7 games played, right? Still top, Liam Roberts.
Wow.
But only with 10. I say only with 10. That's because nearly a month ago, he had 9. So he's kept one more clean sheet in that time. Others haven't been able to capitalise and overtake him. But there are two newcomers from the previous table also on 10 with 21. So at the moment, it's a three-horse race at the top. You've got Liam Roberts with 10 in 21, Sam Johnston also with 10 in 21, and Matthias Sarkic also with 10 in 21. And then just behind them, you've got Allison with 9 in 15. Cheers. And then Gavin Batsunu and Mark Travers also with 9, but Batsunu in 20, Travers in 21.
Well, there you go.
Anything more? No? I want to feel your enthusiasm here, Richard.
No, I am. I am enthused. I mean, I suppose we're at the halfway point, or nearly at the halfway point, just shy, aren't we? And to have a race as tight as this, and I know it's all that anyone's really talking about at the moment, goalkeepers and outfield fans alike. I'm sure that this is very much on the lips of everybody. Will it be Liam Roberts? Which would be a huge achievement if he could. And I know, I mean, yeah, I've got no doubt that on the back of this race, Liam Roberts no doubt will have an extra couple of 100,000 Instagram followers and the amount of celebrity attention he's now going to get. I just hope he's prepared.
Thank you for indulging me. I appreciate it. You're started welcome. This podcast enraged. You finished it enthused. So no better way to end the pod. Nice one. Thank you, Richard.
Matthew, as always, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers
away.